Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Hover. Finding the perfect domain name is incredibly easy with Hover. Go to hover.com/twit and save 10% off your first purchase. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/NSS.
Become a bridge officer with your friends on the Starship Horizons. Plus, reviews of the Ekobee 4 Smart Thermostat and Canon 6D Mark II. Live from the Twit Studios in beautiful Petaluma, it's the new Screensavers!
I heard the guitar.
Thanks to Chris from Novato for our show open. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the new Screensavers, episode 116 for August 5th. August? Is it August already?
I can't even believe it. I refuse to believe it.
Wow, that tall drink of water over there, that there is Jason Howell.
Hi.
Host of All About Android and Tech News tonight. Today.
Today.
This morning.
Whenever. Honestly, it's a podcast. You can listen to it or watch it whenever you want.
You know, I just realized it was called Tech News Today when we started doing it at 10 in the morning.
Oh, no, don't go down this road.
And then we did Tech News Tonight in the afternoon. But then we canceled Tech News Tonight. We moved Tech News Today into the afternoon. But it's still not tonight. It's today.
It's best if you just don't even ask.
TNT.
Who knows?
I call it TNT.
I think TNT. That's just the way to go.
Dynamite. Hey, we got a big show for you today. We're going to have some fun. David Hernley is here. He is he's kind of a garage game developer. He's got a daytime job doing software, health software, but mm-hmm. he thought he'd write a computer program that lets you command a starship.
And you know what? It works really well.
You guys played
it. Was a lot of fun. Yes.
You've now played several of these.
Played a couple. I've played the VR version. I've now played the in a browser version.
We had one that, during our New Year's Eve party.
I didn't play
a few
that
years
time.
Back, and that was one that the guy would bring around to parties. So we've really come a long way. This is one you can install with what you've got already today and invite the friends over. And
absolutely,
it's really cool. So we'll play that Starship Horizons Bridge Simulator, SHBS. That's not a good acronym.
it's best not to end with BS.
Megan Maroney let her kids install a thermostat. You won't believe what happened next. We're talking about that. Barnaby Britton will join us again from DP Review. He's got his review of Canon's entry-level full-frame sensor DSLR. It's a really nice camera. How nice? It's a good price. We'll find out. And Liam Kennedy. He's been here before. He built a Raspberry Pi that could tell you when the International Space Station was above. So this is a video. Is this coming off your Raspberry Pi? That is really nice. This is a video. The space station has high-def cameras that they turn on for about half of each revolution around the Earth. And it's on right now. So we're actually seeing the South Pacific. But in about 12 minutes, it's going to be above us. So if we hurry, we might be able to see what it looks like out the window.
It's going to cover the sun, and
we're going to get an eclipse.
Yes, we're going to get an eclipse.
That would be kind of cool. Anyway,
maybe not.
We'll talk about the ISS above. We're literally 8 or 9 minutes away from the Passover, and we're going to, of course, answer your questions in the mailbag and the call for help. But let's get started with the topics of the day. The news,
as it were.
I got a lot of Twitter activity about LastPass, and I wonder what you think about this. LastPass, as you remember, is a program that I use, Steve Gibson uses and recommends. We use it as a company. Do you mm-hmm. use LastPass?
I do. I use it. Me and my wife both use it.
Yeah. It's a password vault. Mm-hmm. That's always better to use some password vault because It will generate long, strong passwords. Passwords you can't remember, but it'll do the remembering for you. And it is definitely, I think, a key part of your security arsenal. LastPass has a free version. That continues. But most people would pay $1 a month, $12 a year, right, for the premium version. Now, they got sold to LogMeIn. And now, about a year after the acquisition, they've announced they're going to double the price.
Yeah, so the premium version goes from $12 to $24 a month, which is still only $2
$2 a month.
That's a year. $24 a year.
Yeah, so $2 a month.
No new features added on that.
That's the weird thing. It would have been probably more politic had they added some.
If they had added like one or two things or switched things around a little bit, it might have made taken a little bit of the hit off. The free version loses unlimited sharing and emergency access. So if that's something you need, you have to pay for that now. But then they have the families plan.
Which is
like
a good deal.
Four times the original price.
If you have four people in your family, it's a good deal. Five people would be a better deal. But you get six licenses, so it's potentially a discount.
Right.
Wouldn't help you, though. Because,
I don't really know. I mean, it's just my wife and I using LastPass right now.
Me too.
And we $48 use the sharing a year for both of us. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm not really quite sure that, like, I saw families and initially I thought, oh, well, this is for families. It's going to be for me. But it really seems like it's for my family maybe 10 years from now.
Right.
When our kids are a little bit older.
And you have three more children.
Yes. And maybe
gonna
we
be
have a
few more deal.
Children.
It's going to be a great deal. Well, and this comes on the heel of 1Password moving from a you buy it once, own it forever model to a subscription model. Mm-hmm. I think the reason people are making a big deal about it is because there's fears that LogMeIn, which is not beloved by consumers for a variety of reasons, might be beginning. This might be the beginning of the end of LastPass as being a great product. I don't see that as yet. I think charging $2 a month is a very reasonable amount of money.
I would agree.
And considering what you get, I mean, say
$1 a month was like crazy for what you were getting.
That was the problem.
I always thought, like, man, this is, when you're talking value, you get a lot for that single dollar a month.
Yeah.
So doubling that is not a big deal to me.
So I understand why people are, a little bit worried, maybe irritated. Irritated is the right word.
Yeah.
That this is going to happen.
Because people don't like change.
No.
That's basically what it boils
down to. I don't see yet any evidence that LogMeIn is going to ruin, as everybody was worried, ruin LastPass.
I don't feel like that.
They doubled the price, but it's still cheap.
Yeah.
Let's see here. Microsoft has a new plan on the Surface. This is interesting. They're going to the Microsoft Surface. They have the laptop, the Surface. What is it called? The Surface Pro, which I think Alex uses. He likes the Surface Pro, and they have the Surface Laptop, which I have. We have the Surface Studio here in our studio. They're going to do this system with all of them, where you pay a monthly fee, the cost of the computer divided by 24, no interest. And you get a free upgrade every 18 months, if you wish. Basically, the next version of the same device, and the payments keep on coming.
Okay. I mean,
this is what the cell phone companies do, right?
Yeah, I was going to say that. Also, there's a lot of like premium software that's doing this now. So it's like, don't buy the software suite. Just pay us every month. And
well, I do that with my Adobe Creative Cloud.
There you go, Creative Cloud. Yeah. I do it with Pro Tools. More and more, we're getting used to this kind of like subscription based living when it comes to technology. Applying that to hardware, I don't know if the translation is there.
The only key is, of course, the hardware has to be in perfect condition when you turn it into the next thing. So you got to be careful with
it.
But something like the Surface Studio is $3,000. That's the lowest price. The laptop, the one you want, is probably about $1,299. Same thing for the Pro once you get the keyboard and all that stuff. So I feel like anything that makes it easier for a student to get into this.
Totally.
Pay a known monthly cost for it that doesn't, break the bank. I think and have this kind of option to upgrade in 18 months. Again, I don't think this is a problem. I think this is good that Microsoft's doing this.
Apple has this as well, right, for the iPhone?
They have it for the iPhone, you bet. Yeah. But I think this is the first one I've ever heard of for a computer.
Yeah.
Like a laptop. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Finally, I don't know if you saw, I think you did see it, an article in The Atlantic about the iGen. I'm a baby boomer. Are you a Gen X or Gen Y?
I would qualify as Gen X. Yes,
kids
wore the cardigan sweaters and moshed to Nirvana. So I think I'm like solidly in the Gen X category.
Kids who grew up in the internet era are considered millennials. Well, what about kids who grew up in the iPhone era? So this era means you kind of came of age maybe 10, 11, 12 in 2007.
Okay.
So you would be 22 or younger. right? My son, for instance, would be kind of at the outer edge of the eye, Jen. And the reason we mention this is The Atlantic had an article called, well, it's written by a psychologist, a research psychologist, Gene Twenge, who studies generational differences. This is the title. I don't know if Gene wrote this or somebody at The Atlantic. Have smartphones destroyed a generation? Oof. More comfortable online than out partying? Post-millennials are safer physically than adolescents have ever been, but they're on the brink of a mental health crisis. What? And then it turns out this is an excerpt from a book that's coming out later this month that right. Gene is writing that has an even more kind of scurrilous title. It's obviously designed to generate traffic. Let me see if I can get the name of the book. I have to scroll all the way.
It's down at the very bottom.
Yeah, but the problem is there's so many comments on this. It's taken me forever to get back to the top.
And it's a long article in and of itself.
The name of her book is iGen, Why Today's Super Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, right, less happy, and completely unprepared for adulthood. Isn't that what your mom said to you?
Yeah.
What are you going to do, play video games for a living?
I'm not looking forward to the day that your generation is ruling the world.
Right. Or my mom said, get outside, get some fresh air, stop reading that book. People have said this. I tweeted this a couple of days ago, and a lot of tweets back. People have always done this with books, when television came out, when radio came out, when the internet came out, when computer came, video games. Did your generation, they probably said, video games.
There was a lot of that with video games, I remember growing up. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So I think, and by the way, Dr. Twenge points this out in her article, that every generation has its thing. Sometimes, you know, it can be either bad or good. It can be both. Mm-hmm. And as she points out, in fact, if you look at the graphs in the article, it's actually quite interesting. Research on this iGen shows that they've done some things that are good. They're safer than any generation before because mostly they're in their bedrooms.
Yeah, they're just hanging out in their house.
They don't like to go to the mall. They go to the mall with their family, but they don't go to the mall with their friends. They date less. They have sex younger. They're not in a rush to drive.
They have sex less, and therefore there's a lower
older,
count.
Older, I mean. Yes.
Yeah, older, so they're, therefore
look
there's a lower
driving
count.
Look at this driving one. This one's actually true about my son. Let me look at these graphs. In no rush to drive, these are seniors, high school seniors. See the graph? And the iPhone is when it really starts dropping precipitously.
Wow, that's crazy.
This is the age at which they're driving. It's getting, you know, or the percentage that have a driver's license. Now, it's still around 70%, but that's dropped a lot from 85% in 1976. So you could see that there is a trend going on. They're dating less.
I would also say, from a parent standpoint, like I've got two young girls right now, and one thing that I go back and forth on right now that I wonder if it ties into this is this general question of, as parents of this generation of kids, do we coddle too much? Do we try to protect them from too much?
Well, one of the reasons I think they don't go to the mall is because of stranger danger.
Right.
And, you know, we've been told they can't walk down the street by themselves. And I think we do kind of encourage kids in this generation to stay indoors.
Yeah.
To stay with mom and dad. Don't go outside and play on the street. It's dangerous out there, and I think that's part of it.
Yeah, I mean, she points out in this article, she says 12th graders in 2015 left the house less than 8th graders did in 2009.
Wow. They were like 8th graders. They're like 8th graders.
I know. I mean, I remember as a kid, you know, I mean, in junior high and even later elementary school, like I was a free-range kid.
Right.
You know, I could roam around
my
neighborhood.
That's what they call them today, free-range. They do.
That is exactly what they call
them. But I do think that the biggest difference is this. This is the iPhone that came out in 2007. It's Android, too. Yeah. The 75% of all high school seniors they interviewed had iPhones, not Android. And I think that's the thing, is that these have been designed to be compelling. Mm-hmm. Addictive, right?
Addictive, yes.
And the software designers are getting better and better at putting stuff in here that keeps you looking at it. And Snapchat, of course, is one.
Yep, Snapchat has the
those filters.
Well, not only the filters, but that you have to use it every single day to keep your streak up.
That's right.
Yep.
I didn't even know about that, never having had a streak.
I don't know if I've had a single stream.
Oh, I haven't Snapchat today. I have to Snapchat. So, you know, of course, every generation has its thing that drives its elders crazy. And I'm sure part of this is that. But I do worry, and I think we've seen this even from generations that spend a lot of time playing video games. And I've talked to a lot of people. We have a 14-year-old. I'd be interested. Your daughters are too young yet to notice if this is going to impact them.
Yeah, 7 and 4.
But I do notice this with a lot of kids that are early high schoolers. They have a very different life than we did. I watched Michael, our 14-year-old, and his socialization, a lot of it is over the internet with kids on Skype while they're playing games together. That's a lot of it. A lot of screen time, more screen time than I had. Because we didn't have screens when I was a kid. We listened to the radio, though. We sat around the radio. Anyway.
Is it happening?
Is it happening?
It's happening.
ISS is above? Oh, my God! Can we see Petaluma?
Wave, everyone. No.
How could we tell what we're seeing here? It's all clouds. You've been doing this long enough. You probably know what it's supposed to look like, but... For me, it's a mystery.
We're somewhere down there.
In just a bit, we're gonna talk with Liam Kennedy. He built the Raspberry. Oh, they turned the camera off.
Yeah, UFOs.
UFOs. Hey, what?
Oh no! They gave us a more compelling shot. Oh no! No,
they just turned the camera off.
That's a standby.
Right, they said we're going over Petaluma. Better turn the camera off. Anyway,
they're talking about us.
You could do this too. You can do this with your own Raspberry Pi. Look at that. He's got the.
That's
you got that Pi screen. I have one of those. That's really cool. So where is the ISS at any given moment? You'll find out.
Right on.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Anyway, we could go on and on about the iGen. I think there's some truth to this though, and it's fun. It's interesting. They're less likely to get enough sleep. Because they bring their phones to bed with them.
Oh, man.
We actually have to take Michael's phone away. Derby's not old enough yet to have that problem. I'm asking Jerry, our producer. But I think when they get to about 10 or 11, that starts to become a problem. I don't know what the answer is. We talked about it a lot on the radio show. And a lot of parents said, I just make them go outside and dig ditches. One guy called and said, I give them a shovel and I get them outside and have them lay concrete. And then another guy called and said, you got to give him something fun to do. So we take him fishing, you know, and he likes to go fishing. And so that gets him out of the house and away from the screens. You got to give him some reason. So there's two approaches, the carrot and the stick in the ass. Stick. This carrot and the stick. That's the saying, right? All right. We're going to talk in just a little bit to David Hernley. And you actually, before we do that, we're going to see you guys playing the game.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun.
And if you've ever wanted to command a starship, this might be the perfect game for you. But first, a word from our sponsor, Hover.com. How many domain names do you have? Are you like me? You're sitting there and you go, oh, I got an idea for a business. Let's go register the domain name. I have dozens of domain names, and I can tell you every single one of them hosted at Hover.com. Every great idea deserves a great domain name, and Hover's got them all. Over 400 extensions, not just .com and .net, but wacky niche extensions like design. Yeah, leo.design, .info. I like info.io. It's very popular. .me, .mobi, .news, .tech.
.online?
There's even .pizza, .ninja. Jason, yellowgold.ninja. That would be awesome. Dot horse.
I might have to do
look at that. Hospital lawyer. So they have 400 of these. And I can tell you, there's a domain name for you. Once you find that domain, Hover makes it very easy. They don't do a lot of upselling. You know, sometimes you go to these sites where there's 15 pages of check boxes. No, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. One thing you do get automatically with Hover, who is privacy? They know you want to protect your personal address and your phone number. So who is privacy comes free with all supported domains at Hover.com. And look at this. Once you get the domain name, it's so easy to connect to all these services. One of the reasons they make it easy is they don't do web hosting. So if you're on WordPress or Blogger or 500 Pixels or LinkedIn, you can easily connect your domain name. You know what else is easy to do? Email. Everybody should do this. If you don't have your personal email domain, your family name, your company name, get it. It's professional, but it also is smart because if you decide to change email service, you don't have to tell everybody you're moving. And Hover makes email very easy. All for $5 a year. You can have the email bounced to Gmail or anywhere else. They host the mail. But you don't have to give out that Gmail address. You give out that fancy email address that you have, your personal domain name. I can go on and on, but I want you to try Hover. By the way, the more domains you have at Hover, the more of a discount Hover automatically applies to your account. So it saves you a lot of money. And it's easy to move to Hover. I use their concierge service. They moved me over, and that was a great thing. Try it right now. Find a domain name for your idea, yellowgold.ninja.
It's available on Hover.
Yep.
I could buy it and just hit plus.
Go to hover.com/twit. If you do that, go to hover.com/twit and 10% off your first purchase. So buy 100 domain names. You'll save a lot of money.
Yellowgold.band.
Band would be good, except it's just you.
Yeah, I know.
That's a small band. Yeah. Hover.
It's a one-man band.
One-man band. That's a thing. OneManBand.ninja. Hover.com/twit. Give it a try today. Now, before we go over and take a look at the setup and what's required, David Hernley is here. We, last Friday, was it yesterday? This was a week ago.
Yeah, this is about a week ago.
Jason played with a bunch of other folks from the office. Alliance Command. We sent you on a mission aboard the ASC Horizon. And this is what it looked like. Take a look.
Our tour of duty is about to begin aboard the ASC Horizon. Your first order of business is to depart the safe stock. Once you clear, you will receive your next orders. Okay, from Alliance Command. Yeah. All right, bridge crew, report in. Starting with engineer.
Engineer standing by. All systems at 100%.
Flight standing by.
Tactical. Roger.
Science!
Comms, communicate to space dock that we are ready for departure.
Requesting permission to depart.
Horizons, you are go for departure.
Mr. Delahanty, take us out.
What speed?
Regular speed.
Ahead full, sir.
You are all clear, Horizons. Okay. Good luck.
What's the NSS LaPorte?
Hailing NSS Laporte.
Can you scan that, Megan?
ITEX heavy shuttle is a medium-range shuttle, slow and not very maneuverable, but well-armored.
That sounds about right. That's a Laporte class for sure.
Yes.
Message from Starbase Alpha. We need you to inspect the two comm stations in orbit around the planets in the Viridian star system.
Mr. Delahanty, navigate to our first waypoint.
Setting course to Viridian 1.
Engage. We are now going ludicrous speed.
A message from comm station that they are under attack. Please assist.
All right, setting status to red alert. God. Prepare yourself.
Okay, lasers are off, but I can arm them. I can raise shields, too, if you'd like.
Raise shields and arm.
Raising shields, it's a button. Pressed. Arm lasers, on.
All right, make our way full to that location.
Setting intercept course.
I've scanned the DART A1A.
What's the report?
45.58 kilograms of steel, 11.4 kilograms carbon fibers, one life form.
We're under attack, everyone.
Do I fire?
Fire at will.
Okay, I will aim and I will fire. Oh, yeah.
Target destroyed? Well, good work, everyone. We survived our first battle.
Captain, I believe this means that our shields are slightly down.
Yeah. What are those red marks?
Red marks are possibly some damage. Let me investigate this.
All right. Any other vessels detected in the system?
No.
All right. Mr. Delahanty, there's, I believe, another planet in this system.
Viridian 2 is the next possible destination.
Set a waypoint and engage when ready.
Engaging.
Woo! That was quick.
It's very close.
Ion reactor is damaged. Bravo team is repairing currently. Alpha, Charlie, and Delta are en route.
Good. All right. Anything on the radar?
A lot.
Less, yes.
Whoa.
Give me a full scan, science officer.
Shuttle Epsilon, Viridian 2-4, Viridian 2-10, Viridian 2-14, Viridian 11-20, 11-19. We're dead.
Those are all shuttles?
Oh. No.
Looks like we have one enemy target on the screen. Navigate for intercept course.
Should I hail them?
You can try comms, but if I know these bastards, they won't respond.
Space pirates, Captain.
The worst kind of pirates. Tactical, I want you to shoot when ready.
They said enjoy the vacuum of space.
57 kilometers.
Looks like they're firing.
Oh, dude.
Change alert status to red.
Alert status red.
Shield generator is underpowered.
Roger that. Tactical officer.
I shot the wrong direction.
Captain, shall I redistribute power to the shields?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, did you take out both of them?
I think so.
Wow. Do we have another target?
I'm shooting.
Keep firing. What are our shield status?
Shield generator down to 71%.
I'm going to go ahead and arm us with something a little bit nicer. The mosquito.
Whatever you do, do it quickly.
Life support's down to 41%.
Should I request that shuttle Epsilon to attack them too?
Yes.
It looks like we're going down. I want you guys to know that I love you all.
Shield generator down to 22%, Captain.
Keep firing, Tactical.
I'm doing the best I can.
You could do a little bit better.
Captain, I recommend raising power to shield generator. We're out of shields.
I will not lose this ship.
Captain, to repair.
Can we get out of here, Patrick?
It takes a really long time to reload.
Evasive maneuvers.
I think this is it.
We're going to roast these pirates.
Yeah!
Woo! We finally did it!
Good work, team.
Yeah, that was tough.
But I'm happy we stuck through to the end.
I know.
Yep.
I know.
And you know, the amazing thing, they were all drunk.
It was 10 in the morning, Leo. Actually, yes, we were all drunk.
It looked like a lot of fun. But what I noticed, you're playing on a Chromebook.
Yeah, I had the
Pixel. Brian, the captain, was using a phone. We had an iPad. We had a couple of Windows machines.
Surface.
So this will work on anything. David Hernley is here. He's with Mythrix Studios, creator of Starship Horizons, a labor of love for a few years, yeah?
Absolutely.
Nice to see you.
Oh, glad to be here.
So this is a great party game, obviously.
Oh, we hope so.
You wouldn't play it by yourself.
Actually, you can. You can play as a fighter.
Just
a single fighter with a throttle and stick if you wanted to.
Can you play with other people online, or does everybody have to be in the same room as you?
You can play as a bridge either online across the internet, or you can play multiple ships, different bridge crews together.
The same scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, this is neat.
Yeah.
So let's explain a little bit how this works. It's kind of a client-server system,
mm-hmm.
but you run the server. Somebody runs the server.
Right. Basically, there's an executable. It runs on Windows today that runs the ship's computer, if you will, the simulation, and runs your main view screen. So if you think like
classic...
And that's
what's right behind you right now.
Classic Star Trek style.
That's not ISS above.
No.
Right there. Actually, it looks a lot like.
Kind of could be.
Yeah, I don't know.
And here we are in space dock. But that runs from that computer that runs your server.
And it's running a web server,
mm-hmm.
which then everybody else who's playing the game logs into, either over the internet or with a local host.
Correct.
Well, that's kind of neat, and that's why it'll work on all these different devices, because it's just an HTML5 browser.
Right, it's a BYOD, bring your own device, and you know, any competent modern piece of hardware will run it well. And we try to make a lot of screens available, both screens that you know they'll interact with, like your classic science fiction stations, mm-hmm. you know, captain, flight officer, tactical officer, science officer, things like that, but also have screens available, so if you really want to go crazy and have like an alert status screen and shield status and hull status and have all these different displays just like you would see in a sci-fi.
Is that what you did, Jason? Yeah,
that's what we ended up doing. If you go back and watch the video, you'll see in front of us were a couple of screens that were dedicated screens for different status or the view that you have right here, and that helps with the immersion completely.
I love that you could use touch too. So if you're using a touch device, touch works. You mm-hmm. obviously use
I feel like
mouse.
That's the way to go. Like if you have the touch device, and especially like the Chromebook or you know Surface tablets
or a phone
touch enabled or a phone or whatever, but it's really nice because it again, it's that whole immersion. Immersive quality. It kind of makes you feel like that's your control space.
Yeah, absolutely. And we certainly kind of target the touch devices on purpose, mm-hmm. you know, because the cost of entry, you know, if you look, you know, like an Amazon Fire tablet even, you know, you're not talking a lot of money to get invested if you want to have touch devices and have, you know, your TV in your living room as the main view screen and just have people on couches with their tablets.
How performant is it on kind of lower spec tablets, let's say, low spec hardware?
The cost of entry in terms of that, in terms of the specifications, is really low. I mean, we run actually at conventions on Raspberry Pis,
mm-hmm.
to give you an example.
Wow.
So
you're not using WebGL or some sort of sophisticated technology. It's just a browser and HTML5. The work is being done by the server generating this view screen using DirectX. Although you were saying maybe WebGL down the road.
It is part of our roadmap. Once we get to our final release of version 1, after that we'll look at WebGL as it evolves. Our platform already supports, you know, that web distribution model for that WebGL needs.
Right.
So it's something that once we get past version 1, we'll be adding next year.
This would be kind of fun at a party or an event.
Yeah.
How many players can play?
Up to 6 in a classic bridge, but like we talked about before, you know, you can have multiple bridges playing together in the same scenario, either against each other or with each other. So you might have a mission where you have to divide and conquer and go to different parts of the different star systems to accomplish the same mission. And so,
do you have a scenario builder tool? Could people build their own? Or,
oh, that would be nice.
There is no flat-out tool today, but everything in the game is designed with XML and HTML. So all of the everything that you saw in the video that you guys were playing was designed with just XML specifications. So anybody at home can mod this to create other universes and some of the classic science fiction tropes that are out there. We want them to do that.
And this is available now on Steam in the beta form.
It's not on Steam yet. We'll be on Steam before the end of the year.
Oh, good.
But they can purchase early access on our website, and that license is good through the life of the product.
And how much is that, and where is your website?
It's StarshipHorizons.com is where you can find us, and on Facebook. It's $60. Now, that's for one copy that gets you an entire bridge. So,
got it.
The six people can play off of one copy of the game.
You're really buying the host.
Yes.
And then everybody else is a client.
Yeah. Now, we did encounter a few kind of issues along the way. Yeah. Being it's early access, so you kind of expect that. We actually have video right about the time that
Laporte crash. Hailed them and they said that they are a civilian delivery and just happy to be avoiding any Imperial entanglements.
Mm. That sounds like a Laporte, all right.
Ray shields.
Should I demand them to surrender?
Yes. Shall I divert power to the weapons, Captain?
Yes. Any report back, Victor?
No report.
Setting red alerts. Fire all everything.
Hey! I'm an innocent bystander.
Sit back and relax. And
sending another message of you're killing me, Smalls.
Oh, you froze me.
You just killed us all.
Control,
you broke Leo.
That's what happens when you take down NSS Laporte.
We learned a valuable lesson that day. Never target NSS Laporte. Laporte.
Yeah, yeah.
You never know what you're going to get.
So that was you, Jason, Megan Maroney.
Kind of to be expected.
Jason Howell, Megan Maroney, Brian Burnett, Alex Gumpel was playing, Victor Bognot, he's one of our editors, mm-hmm. Patrick Delahanty, who's our coder. And you guys had fun, I thought.
Oh, it was a blast.
Even though we made you play at 10 in the morning.
That's okay. Obviously, we had a great time. I think what the strength of this game and the many platforms that it works on is that really, as far as a party game is concerned, you don't have to think about bringing a bunch of VR hardware to the place. You have your phone in your pocket. Yep. And you can probably just pull it out and just be like, well, there's five of us here. We've all got touch screens. Let's just do this.
Yep.
And just jump right into it. That's really
so you, as typical in game design, you wrote the engine first. You're mm-hmm. now designing scenarios.
Yes. We're kind of in that content phase where we're building the world out, adding more depth to it.
Absolutely. How many, by the end of the year, how many scenarios will we be able to play?
We're looking to have at least 20 is our target.
It sounds like lots of fun.
Yeah.
And lots of fun for a party. How did you? So you're by day a software developer. Mm-hmm. You don't mind going home and coding at night?
I actually have a laptop tray that I have in bed that I sit with various streams on.
Your wife must love you, honey. What's what are we doing tonight? Well, I'll be writing the what is it? The what is the scenario in Kobayashi Maru scenario?
Love you, darling.
Yeah. Sorry, honey. But someday we're going to be rich. Keep telling her that. This sounds like a lot of fun. How long ago did you start this?
Started it 4 years ago. Again, like you said, as a passion project.
Tell me about your team. You have a really good Emmy Award-winning composer doing the music.
Yeah, Joel Everett. He came to me and said, I'd love to help with your product.
That's
and
nice. That's awesome.
And he's actually still building our new tracks as we speak. I got one today. We're blessed to have him as part of the team.
So that's part of the game is you get take her out and you get the music as you sail out of the... That's fun.
Yeah.
But mostly it's you. Do you have a graphics designer or anything?
No, it's primarily me right
now. That's neat. Wow. Yeah. I love it. So this is a real passion project.
Yeah.
Now, what is going on here? Who's playing it now?
Now, that was what we did is that was a deluxe bridge. That's over 20 touchscreen displays, three screens wide projection that we had at a convention last year.
I want this.
So it scales. So basically, like we talked about, you can have the tablets on a couch in front of your TV.
Right.
We have a gentleman that built his own bridge.
Wait a minute. This is the same engine?
Yes, exact same.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah. It's just a matter of how you scale your hardware. It's up to you.
Yeah.
We take it. This was at conventions. We take it to conventions all throughout the year. We have several groups that we work with. BridgeSimulators.com, actually, their primary job is working with conventions to take this experience to them. We have a group out in the UK, UK Bridge Simulators, that also does it for conventions over there. So we're really trying to get this out in front of people. And that's actually the construction that a gentleman by the name of Tim Prickett did.
Wait a minute. This is some guy's house?
Yes. He built his own Horizons.
Oh, Lord.
That is so awesome, though. If you're going to do it right.
After Captain dinner, Scher. We're going to go down in the basement and we're going to conquer the universe here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be fun.
But, that is wild. I love that.
Yeah. That is great.
Jason, this is the answer to that thing, that iGen thing we were talking about. If people grow up just on computer screens all the time, we'll have a party. Yeah. And you can all be playing the same game together. It's pretty social, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, sure, you're all in an enclosed space. But, I mean, it forces you to communicate and to, you know, work as a team. I don't know. I feel like it's a very social thing. Is there any communication, like voice communication online, like if you're not all in the same space, or any plans for that?
So we have two roadmaps for that. Audio is going to be first. And so you can have, you know, bridge to bridge.
Right.
Or if you're playing as a single bridge but across the internet, you can communicate. But also we're going to be doing video. So, you know, that classic science fiction trope where you can say on the screen and bring up your enemy on screen and talk to them and curse them, you know, with the loud Shatner-like voice. Ah! You know, that kind of thing.
This is so cool. I want to play this. So $60, go to starshiphorizons.com to be in on the beginning, the early release of this.
Yep.
And then eventually Steam and elsewhere you'll be able to play it.
Absolutely.
And you need a Windows PC.
Today for the server.
For the home,
right.
the server.
Yeah.
And then I guess if you're going to run it locally, you could just... What, you log into the server, basically, right?
Well, you just open up your web browser and open up the...
Go to the address of the server.
Yeah, and actually, when the game comes up, there's a button where you can click, and it actually brings up the browser for you, so you can...
And what ports do you use if I want to do this over the internet?
It's 1864 through 1866.
Oh, that's not a big deal. So you just port forward those ports?
Yep.
And you're commanding the Starship.
Absolutely.
That sounds like so much fun. So nice to meet you. Thank you for bringing this, David.
Oh, glad to be here.
David Hernley is the founder of Mithrix Studios, lead developer at StarshipHorizons.com. Wow. Very cool. Mm-hmm. Our first call for help coming up in just a little bit. We're going to talk to an old friend who's got a new problem. But first, I want to tell you about Rocket Mortgage. This is a solution for a problem a lot of us have. If it's time to buy a house, there's very few of us can sit down and say, well, let me write a check. You got to get a home loan, right? But that process can be the worst part of buying a house. In fact, I will guarantee you it's the worst part. It's fun to go house hunting, look at houses, pick a house, negotiate the deal, but then you got to get the loan. And sometimes it can drag on and on and on. When we bought our house just 3 years ago, we were still back in the old, you know, 20th century, maybe 19th century version of getting a home mortgage. We went to a big bank. It took us literally months to the point where the seller was going, come on, guys, I might sell this to somebody else. It was driving us crazy. If only Rocket Mortgage had existed back then. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. It's from Quicken Loans, the best mortgage lender in the country. One of the biggest, too. I think $92 billion in home loans last year. I mean, they're good, and they have all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards, 7 years running for primary mortgage origination, number one in customer satisfaction, 4 years running now for mortgage servicing. So they are really the best. And they love geeks, so they've created a mortgage approval process that's completely online. They call it Rocket Mortgage because it lifts the burden of getting a home loan. You don't have to go to a bank anymore. You don't have to go through boxes of paperwork. You just go online. You could do this on your phone. It's kind of, you know what? It's kind of like the Starship simulator of rocket, of home loans. You go online at rocketmortgage.com/NSS. You push a few buttons. You pick the length and the rate of your loan. It's completely transparent. They've got trusted partners with all the financial institutions, so you don't even have to go through papers. You just give them permission to give them your bank statements, your pay stubs, whatever it is they need. It varies per person. They will crank it really fast because it's computers, right? Thousands of calculations a second. And within minutes, not months, not weeks, not days, within minutes, based on your income, your assets, your credit, they will give you a home loan option that you qualify for so you can pick the one that's just right for you. They'll usually give you multiple choices. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand what you're getting into fully, and then mortgage confidently. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Go to rocketmortgage.com. NMLS.com/NSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states at MLSConsumerAccess.org. Number 3030. RocketMortgage.com/NSS. All right, Jason, it's time for a call for help.
Let's do it. Let's go.
All right. You made it on the line from Sacramento. George is back. Hi, George.
Hey, George.
Hey, Leo. Hi, Jason.
Last time we talked, you were actually in studio. You're a school teacher. Chromebooks, right? And I remember you asked us if you could put the Android store, on all Chromebooks. And we said, well, you have to get a newer Chromebook. Did you decide to get newer Chromebooks? What did you decide to do?
We decided that the district was going to manage our Chromebooks the way they wanted to, and we would do as we're told.
Always a good decision.
Yeah.
Always a good decision. Do what you're told. All right. Well, I love this. I think you told us that you've got a screen at the front. What do you teach?
I teach third, fourth, and fifth grade computer work.
Oh.
We do everything from typing to internet searches to coding. Everything.
They're doing that young.
Yes.
That is really cool. Mm-hmm. Third, fourth, and fifth
grade. I have third graders writing apps.
That is awesome.
So you have a screen in the front of the classroom?
I have a screen, and they all have a computer in front of them, and they code and do their work. And
you said you like to use
Google Drive. And
you have a tablet. Is that controlling the screen?
Well, right now I have a Chromebook that's controlling the screen.
Got it.
It's plugged into an HDMI cable. But what I'm trying to do is step up to the next level and give teachers a convertible they can use both at their desk and walking around the room to not only control the screen, but also do their work and record information. All the other things that teachers need to do today to be technologically advanced.
Yeah. So tell me about controlling the screen. You're just putting whatever's on that convertible onto the screen, or do you have some special software you're using, or what are you doing there?
So right now we're just using an HDMI port and manipulating the screen separately. But I do have a couple of the screens software, so I can flip between screens and do some other things personally that a lot of other teachers won't be able to do. But my question's more along the line of for my day in, day out classroom teacher.
So you could do it wirelessly. And you would need to if you're going to wander around. And if you were using Chromecast, for instance, on the TV, you could Chromecast the screen from most devices, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you have a Chromecast in the room plugged in and you know, syncing
screen
to the same Wi-Fi network.
Ah, that's true.
That might be the challenge. But you could connect to it from there and cast whatever's on your screen.
Similarly, if you have an Apple TV, a $99, you don't have to get the fanciest one, but an inexpensive Apple TV hooked up to the screen, then any Apple device can AirPlay to it. It's very similar.
That's pretty common.
But again, you'd have to have, and maybe would the IT administrators let you have a Wi-Fi network, you know, and join it, the TV join it, or the Apple TV join it, or the Chromecast join it, and the device join it, and send data that way? Would they let you do that?
We do that now.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so you've got a Wi-Fi network
we've got
already running.
Our whole school's wired, so I can do it from outside in the hallway if I need.
That's nice. So we do that in most conference rooms. A lot of conference rooms do that. You sit down with a laptop. It used to be you'd have to hook up, you know, run PowerPoint on your PC and hook it up to the screen. Nowadays, you just AirPlay it or you Miracast it or you Chromecast it to the TV. Okay. So really that means you could use almost any device.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a preference?
Well, right now we're looking at convertibles because sometimes teachers want to type, and sometimes teachers want to work on a touchscreen.
Right.
So what we're trying to do is to find a convertible that we can use both of those things that has a price point that's reasonable enough to allow us to buy them for 45 teachers.
What's the price point?
Well, $350 is about as high as my boss will let me go at this point. And even with the new iPad.
Yeah, that's $329, but you got to get a keyboard. On the other hand, I should point out, if you have any Bluetooth keyboard, you can use that with the iPad.
Right.
So you may have lying around some keyboards that you could reuse. You can't use a wired keyboard with it, of course.
I have plenty, but they're going to one more connection for most of my
people.
Right. More flex and more complexity is probably not a good thing. I was doing some searches, and of course I came up with the Samsung Galaxy Tab S3, but that's almost double the price that you're talking about, especially once you then get into the convertible keyboard aspect of adding that. That's going to be more expensive. There's the Huawei MediaPad M3 that came out very recently. It's a $300 tablet. And I have not tried it myself, but I've heard pretty good things about that. And it does have a number of keyboard attachments for that. And it's like an 8.4-inch display. So it's not gigantic. It's not tiny.
And it's Android. So it's Android. You could use Chromecast to cast the screen up there. I imagine Apple has some volume discounts. It sounds like, though, this might be a good job for one of the convertible Chromebooks.
Yeah.
There are a number of them on sub $300 convertible Chromebooks. When you say convertible, you mean two in one. So you could hold it as a tablet, fold the screen over, hold it as a tablet, or
like
open it up.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that might be the least expensive solution, is one of the inexpensive two-in-one Chromebooks.
Yeah, like an Asus Flip.
The Flip is really actually pretty nice, and I think you can get down to $250.
Oh, man, those look like they're starting at $230.
$230, yeah.
If I buy 40 of them, I'm sure we can work something out.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, Apple's $329 is out the door onesie-twosie. I bet you can go to Apple and get a better educational discount that might be able to get that cost down to not $230, but maybe under $300.
Right.
I don't know if Apple will be any help after I've been on your show, Leo.
Oh, they don't watch. Don't worry.
They don't watch.
Oh, you know Leo Laporte. No deal for you.
You go that direction, then that ties in kind of nicely with what you were talking about, what we were talking about the last time as well. The convertible Chromebook is going to give you, probably going to give you access to all those Android apps as well. It's just kind of an additional extension.
And then, of course, Microsoft has now announced Windows 10S. Which is designed for education. It's Windows 10, but it's stripped down to the point where you can only use Windows Store apps. That's not really the end of the line there, because Office is included. In fact, many of them come with a year of Office. And some of those are really inexpensive, like down to $150. They're basically Microsoft's answer to the Chromebooks. So if you needed Windows, that would be probably a pretty good solution. And some of them even will offer upgrades to Windows 10 Pro for no cost. It's $50 down the road if you want to do that. That's a very reasonable way to take a pretty inexpensive laptop and turn it into a full Windows machine. And I think Alex might be more of an expert on this than I am, but he could use Miracast, right? See, look at these. Start at $189. There's the Acer TravelMate Spin. That's $300. It even includes a pen, which is a pretty amazing thing. This is something teachers, I think, would like. That's Windows 10S, which is effectively fully Windows, with that one exception. You can only install software from the Windows Store. I don't think that's a deal breaker, unless they want to use Chrome. And, you could say, well, for $50, you can unlock it. And I presume, that Miracast would be built in, but you might want to check that, right? It probably would be. In which case, what would he do to his TV to support the input? You get a Miracast dongle that you plug into the TV. Those aren't very expensive.
My projectors have USB ports and stuff for them, so I'm not worried about that.
Yeah. I would guess a lot of the teachers, you should canvas them. You know me, and I'm sure you know Jason feels the same way. We think you should be using Chrome OS. But sometimes you get some resistance from either the administration or teachers. You can say, well, now Microsoft has a pretty credible education offering in this these Windows 10S laptops. If you go to store.microsoft.com, you can see the four or five that are being offered today, not from Microsoft, but from third parties, as we showed. I think those aren't bad. I think those are decent choices as well. I can't remember. I know Microsoft offers that Windows 10 Pro upgrade free on its devices. I don't know if those other devices do, but Microsoft says $50 after December on all of them, so that's not going to be a big deal either. Yeah.
I got something to do for the next 2 weeks. Thanks, Leo.
You got a little research. When does school begin?
We start August 31st.
August 31st. And do you need to acquire all this stuff ahead of time?
No. I'm going to make the decision in the next couple of weeks.
You got a little time.
Probably get a couple of practice. couple of demonstration models to show around a teacher.
I have not yet played with any of these really low-cost Windows 10S devices. So I don't. My guess is at that price point, they're going to be somewhat cheesy. Not worse than a Chromebook, but they're not going to be the top-of-the-line hardware. But it's interesting that all four of those there are two-in-ones, and three of them are available now. I don't see a price in the Lenovo, but the Acer and HP are both $299. Look at that. Yeah. To Lenovo, that is not a bad system, given what you get, $284. That really is, you can see, they're really competing right there, dead on with a Chromebook.
Yep.
So at least it gives you an option if Chrome OS is a non-starter at your school.
We'll run a couple of them up the flag, won't see if they fly.
And I think almost all of them offer 1 year of Microsoft Office. But again, as you know, on all of these, the big companies, you should talk to the educational reps because they'll probably have some deals for you. Hey, nice to talk to you once again. I'm glad.
Thank you very much.
They are so lucky to have you in your Sacramento school district because this is how it works, though, right? Is that there's usually an advocate, a teacher who says, I'm going to take this on. I really want to do this. And thank goodness those kids are very lucky that that you're doing that, George.
Well, 21 years the same size, so we're definitely got our beachhead set.
Well, you're doing the most.
So now we're going to keep pushing.
It's the most important work, getting the next generation. Don't let those iGeners get glued to the screen, right?
Oh, sure. Go out and run to the fence. Let's go.
Hey, it's great to talk to you, George.
Thank you, George.
Take care. Yeah, I think that Microsoft really doesn't want to see what's happening already. 21% of all the computers being sold into schools now are Chromebooks, and they don't want to see that continue. That's really at the cost of Microsoft Windows machines. They want to see kids using Windows going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're lessening the blow, right, with the $50 kind of transfer over to a full version. That at least lets you get your feet wet, get in the door, and maybe you decide that you need to do it. It's not the end of the world. $50 is not that much.
No. Next week, Ian Thompson joins us. So if you have a question for our British friend, here's how you ask it.
Need tech help? The new Screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
Do you, Jason, do you have a smart thermostat in your house?
We have, well, it's not really super smart. It's not the kind that you know, it's not like a Nest or anything like that. Yeah. It's connected to the internet, and I could set it for my phone.
Well, that's smart.
I mean, it's smart, but it's not smart-ish. it's not doing like the AI stuff behind the scenes, I suppose.
I had a Nest.
What'd you think?
And then I moved, and it was kind of all right. It worked. It did, but I never reinstalled it.
Yeah.
So it's like, I had one. But I don't urgently.
Right.
Anyway, Nest no longer owns this space. There are lots of other companies who have come in with smart thermostats. Yep. One of the biggest names is Ecobee. Megan Maroney was a good daughter and had her kids install an Ecobee 4 smart thermostat in her folks' home. Watch how it went.
My parents had an old-fashioned, sad, relatively dumb thermostat, and I decided it was time for them to upgrade. Petaluma has a pretty mild climate, but they have air conditioning and heat, and their thermostat is located upstairs from their bedroom, so I thought it would be nice for them to be able to control it from their phones or from their Amazon Echo.
Turn up the thermostat.
Setting thermostat AC to 78.
First, let's talk about whether you need a smart thermostat at all. Do you like the idea of being able to control your device with your voice or with an app? Do you like saving money when your thermostat automatically adjusts as the temperature outside rises and falls? If you answered yes to both of those questions, you might need a smart thermostat. The Ecobee 4 is not that different than the Ecobee 3. Both of them work with the Amazon Echo. But the Ecobee 4 also is an Amazon Echo. You can ask it many of the things that you can ask your Echo.
Play my flash briefing.
Here's your flash briefing from This Week in Tech.
This Week in Windows Weekly.
The installation was harder than I thought, though with the help of my 12-year-old twins, we got her done. It involved crawling around in the basement and the attic to find out how to disarm the HVAC unit, drilling some holes in the wall, and some thermostats, especially those installed in the 80s or before, don't have access to power. In that case, you'll need to use the power extender kit. We did not. One word of warning, your old thermostat might contain mercury, so be careful when removing it and disposing of it. Once installed, you'll need to connect the Ecobee to your Amazon account in order for it to work like an Amazon Echo. Then you'll also need to enable the Ecobee skill in the Amazon app. Now, it's not obvious that this is a two-step process, and so for a while, the Ecobee would work like an Amazon Echo, but it wasn't able to turn itself up or down until we enabled the skill.
Turn down the temperature.
Sorry, what device?
Now my parents can adjust the temperature with their Amazon Echo or with Siri.
Lower the temperature on the thermostat.
Okay, I set the thermostat to 72 degrees Fahrenheit.
The thing I like best, and the thing that sets it apart from any other thermostat I've ever seen, is the remote sensor. So right now I can have the Ecobee in the main part of the house controlling the temperature during the day, but our house is on the side of a hill, so the downstairs is a lot cooler than the upstairs. So having the remote sensor means we can adjust the temperature in either area, upstairs or downstairs, using the remote sensor. That's really useful. The thing I dislike is that it's really hard to find the documentation. I went to their website, I looked through the manuals, well, manual being a very small pamphlet, and there was no tutorial. But, you know, on the whole, it's not that difficult to use. And it works the way I'd like it to, so that's a minor nuisance.
The Ecobee 4 is $247. That's around the same price as the newest Nest. Now, if you have a lot of smart home integration with Nest already, the Nest might be a better choice for you. Otherwise, Ecobee is better because it has room sensors, and it easily integrates not only with the Amazon Echo and Apple's HomeKit, but also with SmartThings, Wink, IFTTT, Logitech Harmony, and more. So if you don't want or need the Amazon Echo voice services inside your smart thermostat, you might just want to get the Ecobee 3, which is very similar, only without Amazon voice services, and it only costs $200.
I don't know if I would spend $250 if my current thermostat were working as well as it did, but now that I've got it, I really enjoy it.
Thank you, Dad. He's got real talent. I think you should hire him, Leo. I am Megan Maroney, and I host Tech News Today every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, and iOS Today every Tuesday at 9 a.m. Pacific.
I love Megan's parents, Brian and Sharon. They're really, really great. Brian works in advertising, so he's got a little bit of media savvy. That Ecobee is kind of neat.
Yeah, I like the remote
the remote sensor.
That's really cool. Those things that before I saw that, I didn't realize I needed it. Now
need it.
Oh, okay.
Because our thermostat's in the hall, but we usually close the bedroom door, so the thermostat is colder than our bedroom. Our bedroom gets really, really hot.
Yeah.
I might be getting that, although I don't want to shout, "Hey, thermostat, turn the heat down." I'm not going to do that.
It's
cold in here. Fix it. Liam Kennedy's back. It's great to see you again, Liam. He's been
good
on Cody
be
101. Stop by our studio, the old Brick House studio. It has been more than a couple of years, I think.
February of 2014.
So almost three years.
Yeah, I think a little bit after my Kickstarter.
And yes, you had a Kickstarter for this. In fact, we have the original ISS above. This is a Raspberry Pi inside this custom case. And it's got a little Bluetooth adapter there and a little bit of software. That's the ISS above. What does this thing do?
It basically tells you every single time the space station is passing by. In fact, that was the version, the Kickstarter version. That's all it did.
Does it beep? It doesn't even beep.
It literally just lit up. And so it came
it's
out
up.
Of...
It's up there. Well, you've come a long way in the last few years.
I have, and I've got to thank you guys for that. I mean, seriously, this was on your shelf during a radio show, and you just happened to notice it there, and you said, "What's this thing? ISS above. Oh, it's flashing. Is the space station above?"
And that was it?
That was it. And then...
And the rest is history.
People Googled it and found the Kickstarter.
Oh, I'm so
glad. Oh, that's great.
And
that's awesome.
Forever there's been a discount code for the download image because most of the folks who are watching this, many of them will have Raspberry Pi sitting at home doing nothing.
Wondering what they're going to do.
Yeah, so I've got several hundred downloads with Coding 101 as the discount code. Oh yeah,
wearing it around your neck?
I am wearing it around my neck. This is an e-paper display version.
Oh, that's kind of neat.
Of the
so you're actually getting the stats on the e-ink.
It's running a Raspberry Pi Zero.
Look at that.
And that's
super cool.
So I go to NASA sort of events and things, and when that happens, I get this out so that I can let everyone there know.
That is the geekiest name badge I've ever seen.
Yeah, and then when I'm tired with that, I can.
Can you play Pong?
Yeah, almost. Anyway.
Oh, so it's a name badge.
It turns into a name badge. Oh,
yeah. I love it. Here's the new kit. How much is the current kit?
So, and that's it's ridiculously expensive for those who know how Raspberry Pis work, but I make it, so it's $147.
But that's everything. It's not a kit, it's even complete. It's completely
it's just
assembled.
Complete. You switch fact, it on.
This is what you get. It's in a nice case. It's got a screen.
Although that one has an LCD screen on it, which isn't the one that I ship.
Oh, but, what kind of screen?
You plug it into a TV. The TV is the screen. But if you're a geeky person like I am, you know, you've got these LED strips that you can buy. Mm-hmm. And the same software just supports each of them. You don't even have to log into the Pi. You run it all. You configure it using a web browser.
So it's blinking now. Does that mean something's happening?
Yeah. So you see there's a whole lot of green on there. That means the space station is going to come by in less than an hour again.
Oh.
It just went over at the beginning of the show.
Right.
And it's passing by even closer. In fact, on this, it actually tells you exactly when it's... when it's coming
start
by.
The pass will be at 17:05.
And then how many?
Next pass in 48 minutes.
48 minutes.
48 minutes.
That's.
Well, I'm going outside. Now, why do I care if the ISS is above me?
That's a good question.
I've devoted
my life to having. Seriously, for the last 3 years, I've done nothing else. That question, why should you care? It's the only place in space where there are human beings living. Your son, how old is your son now?
He's 22.
22, okay. So for 17 of those years.
Well, I also have a 14-year-old.
Okay, so for the 14-year-old, there's not been one day of his life that astronauts have not been passing him by.
That's kind of neat.
5 to 8 times every day.
Well, Michael and Lisa ran out the other day because we heard the ISS was going to be flying above us.
Yep.
And you can actually see it sometimes with the naked eye.
And in fact, this device does tell you that. It switches to a screen saying...
This was even in daylight because there's enough sun reflecting off
it. Yeah, that must have been just after sunset.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. So it has to be coming by.
And it's a bright dot, and it's moving pretty quick.
Yeah.
How fast is this space station?
It's moving, get this, 5 miles per second. So, yeah.
Well, maybe I was looking at a plane. It would look like it was a little faster than a plane going across.
But it is 250 miles up.
Yeah. Well, it's not like that.
No.
But it's going
eight minutes from when you first see it until it goes by.
Now, does your software tell you where to look in the sky?
It does. Yes. Tells you where to look, when to look.
This is the display
live as it's going
that you would
by.
See on your
so
screen.
The next pass that's coming by, we're in the blue cross at the center of the screen.
Okay,
and that's
so I'd look to the northwest.
Yeah, so it's and this one isn't going to be visible again because it's during daylight. But you will see live video. We're not seeing live video at the moment because it's currently in darkness. The blue part of the orbit is darkness.
Oh, so they only turn on the camera when they're
technically,
on the other side of
the camera is on all the time. It's just that's it's running 30 frames per second, and it's not light enough to see anything.
Can't you see, the city lights?
No. So this is a good thing. Just get this straight. All of those great Aurora videos that you see and the city lights, those are time-lapse. Those are taken by astronauts pointing a DSLR camera, a Nikon, out one of the windows, and each frame is half a second.
Okay.
And then they just put them all together.
So rise time, set time.
Mm-hmm.
The rise time is when it's going to come up over the horizon.
Yep.
Set time is when it's going to go below the horizon.
Precisely.
It shows you the direction of movement.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you get that nice graphic. For people listening, there's a nice graphical illustration of what it's going to, you know, where it's going to go across your horizon.
Yeah.
So you know exactly where to look.
And it's been a great adventure creating this. And you know how, you know.
How do you get the information? Where's that come from?
I steal it from NASA. Don't tell them. No, that's right.
They have a server somewhere spitting that out?
So anyone who has any orbit, any satellite tracker, or even a space station tracker on your phone, we get the orbital elements, they're called.
Right.
They're updated on various websites. It's really just the elements of an equation that you use a library to say, okay, here's my satellite, here's the data on it. Now, when's it going to be coming by and where is it going to be? So
I
it's really
like this.
Now,
if you have a Raspberry Pi at home, you don't have to buy
no,
the product, you can get the software.
You
right?
can get the software. It's not free. It's usually $30, but with the coding 101.
That's all right. Keep using that. We like that.
Just keep using it. Anyway, it can be something different. What would you like?
No, coding 101 is good. What's okay. the deal?
It drops it to 15.
Nice deal. 50% so, off. That's a good deal. Mm-hmm.
Now, you've also got, I noticed in reading up on kind of the progress, like obviously started Kickstarter, mm-hmm. but now like you've got a lot of corporate involvement too, right? A lot of organizations.
Yes.
What are they using this for?
Yeah. So there are a lot of organizations involved in working on the space station. So we're talking about biomedical firms, for instance, who launch experiments. And those firms, some of them, like to have a device that reminds their scientists when the thing that has their experiment on it is passing by.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've shipped dozens out to some corporate organizations who then ship them out to their scientists.
Oh, very nice.
'Cause wouldn't you want to know that the thing that you experiment on, it's just passing
you
by right now.
It still exists.
So, and also schools. So this is the big thing.
Yeah.
So 2,000 of them are out there around the world.
Yeah, this
I've
is
got,
a great way
I've
to
got
get kids excited.
Hundreds in schools.
Yeah.
And NASA has now just, NASA CASIS, which is the Center for the Advancement of Science in Space, they've just provided a grant to support 100 new schools getting these for free.
So if I buy one of these, I could just hook this up to my TV. It could be my screensaver.
Yep, that
I could just
is
have that
it.
On there, and I'd get this display constantly
yep.
of what's going on. A school should have this. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. I love this idea.
So next sunrise is in 6 minutes and 49 seconds. That's when the video will come back on again. So on the space station. And do you mind if I do a little plug for an event that's local?
No.
Tomorrow in Nevada. In fact, that's why I came up. At the Space Station Museum.
There's a Space Station Museum in Nevada?
Yes,
in Nevada?
Right off the freeway.
Like 10 miles south of
yes,
us?
Yes, exactly. And there are going to be a bunch of NASA people, retired NASA astronauts.
When is this? I'm going.
It's from 10 until 4 tomorrow.
Oh, then no, I could skip the radio show. That's
yeah,
fine.
That's right. Yeah. Do it from down there.
Do it from down there.
There you go.
Nevada,
okay, you've got it. You've
not
got
Nevada,
it up there.
The state. Nevada, the town, Northern California town. There, I had no idea.
I had no idea that existed.
There you go.
Look,
yeah.
There's astronauts and stuff.
Yep. So they're all going to be there. In fact, several of them have ISS above.
I love
Bruce
that.
Bought a bunch of them.
Well, so did Bill Nye, the science guy, right?
He did, yes. Thank you, Bill. Yes,
he loves his, too.
Yep, he certainly does. He's obsessed with it. He's on record in the Wall Street Journal. There he is.
He's thanks. Giving you an ad for it.
Wow.
Society member.
Bill just is a great supporter.
Oh, this is the Planetary Society.
Yeah,
yeah, he's the
he's got them. Yeah, he's got them in TVs all around the office there in Pasadena.
Oh, that's great.
So he's an awesome supporter. Thanks, Bill.
I love it that we have people. I didn't really think about that, but
so
Michael,
people buy
Michael's
this
whole life. There's been somebody floating around up there.
Yeah, right. That's exactly it. And it's been an extraordinary journey. I really do. This is authentically here for me that you guys were a very big reason why I stuck to it.
Well, thank
because
you.
Because it really I'm does help. It really makes a difference.
I'm thrilled this is be your full-time job. I think that's really.
Yeah. That's it. I want cool. every school, every student to sort of really be aware of just what's happening in space above them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what it's all
and
about.
And I will vouch for the fact that this gets kids excited. Mm-hmm. It really does. They go, oh, I want to go see it.
Yeah.
I want to take a picture of it. ISS mm-hmm. above. Where can we go to get a ISS above?
www.issabove.com.
No dash in the middle? Just
no
the
dash in the middle. Yeah, it looks like it should have a dash. There's no dash in the middle.
No dash. There's no dash.
Mm-hmm.
I hate dashes. I'm glad there's no dash.
You're anti-dash.
I'm anti-dash. Yeah.
And I answer all phone calls, all emails. I do support.
So if I want to do the LED strip, what is that connected to the GPIO? Where
it is, yes. Yeah. So if you're sort of a real soldery guy, you can just wire any of these LED strips that you can get from. They're a particular version, but you get them from Adafruit.
And you document which pins on the GPIO.
I can do.
Yeah.
I will do.
Yeah. You must do.
You may have realized. I mean, no, I don't right now, but
I have no idea.
It's very easy.
Put it on there until something happens. Yeah. That's all. When it blinks, right. You know you
until
did it right.
Until you haven't gone poof. I have had a few of those experiences.
There's not enough power in a Raspberry Pi to make it.
Yeah, so and this is powered through an external power supply that powers both the Pi and the LED lights. But you can get away with one strip.
That's clever.
Yeah, you can get away with one strip.
It'll power one strip.
Yeah. So so hold this space for me. What I'm trying to do is to get a big LED strip on the entryway to Johnson Space Center.
Oh, that'd be cool.
They have a road right by their Rocket Park. Because I just have this thing that...
Look up. It's up there.
Yeah. When you're entering the place where they run the space station, you know, it would be cool to know that that space station, $100 billion of our tax dollars, is passing by.
It's coming. 39 minutes. It's going to be a good one, too. The LED strip told me.
Yep. Keeps blinking. Really wants us to know.
And what's the best time to see the ISS? Pitch dark, middle of the night? Is that
no,
the best?
No. So the way it is, it has to be close to... It has to be passing by sunrise or sunset. And, yeah. It's the size of a football field, and it's the angle of of the light from the sun hitting the solar panels. And, of course, the thing is that although it's dark for you, the sun has set, it's 250 miles up.
It's still on the...
And so it can still see the sun.
Yeah. So it's a little darker for you, very bright for the ISS.
But you'll get to see sunrises and sunsets by looking at the video stream that plays out.
I love that. The video stream is really cool. We've had it running here. John has had it running here on our monitor for some time now. I said, what's that? He said, you know what that is. I said, what is it? He says, this thing. I said, what the hell's that? Now Liam's reminding me, it's the ISS above. Thank you. Liam Kennedy, go to issabove.com, get your very own. If you've already got a Raspberry Pi, and it'll be a fun project for you to do, he'll also sell you the software. Don't forget, coding101 is the offer code.
Yep.
And $15 for the software. That's great. It runs on Raspbian or...
Yes, it's an image.
It's a standalone
image. It's the standalone image.
Nice.
You just put it in, and
that's
all configuration's done using a browser.
That's
never need to log in and do any coding, even though it's coding 101. Rather ironic. But there we go. I've done the coding for you.
You did. What is it written in? What did you write it in?
Python. It was my very first Python project.
Really? Wow.
Yeah.
Liam,
you're an inspiration. I was coding 101, and that's what I created from it.
That's nice. That's great.
You're an inspiration.
Okay.
Hey, I know a lot of you want to be photographers. Canon has it's least expensive full frame. You always want to go full frame if you can, if you can afford it. Least expensive full frame DSLR. It's the 6D. The new one just came out. Barnaby Britton from DP Review has this look.
Hi, I'm Barnaby Britton from DP Review, and this is our short review of the Canon EOS 6D Mark II. Now, the 6D Mark II is the successor to the 6D, which was on the market for about 5 years, which is a very long time for a DSLR these days. It's Canon's new entry-level model, so the intention is this is the step-up model from APS-C cameras or from Rebel series cameras or from compact cameras in Canon's lineup. It has a brand new sensor, it's 26 megapixels, it's full frame, obviously. And in other respects, it's very similar to Canon's 80D, which is their mid-range APS-C model. It has the same AF system, 45 AF points, much the same autofocus system and video as well. It also has a really handy tilting and flipping rear LCD screen, which makes it extremely handy to use in live view and in movie mode. And overall, it's a very solid, very easy to use camera. The emphasis really is on versatility. There's very little this camera can't do, although it can't do any one thing, as well as some flagship models further up Canon's line. And obviously it's more expensive than Canon's Rebel series and entry-level APS-C format DSLRs. It's about $2,000. That's quite a lot. It will probably come down over time, but that really is how much you pay for full frame these days. And the benefit of full frame is extra image quality. So typically you'd have a slight advantage in terms of noise levels when you're shooting in low light. And also most often you'd get a slight advantage in terms of dynamic range in bright light, which means that your files in this camera can be much more heavily pushed and pulled around to capture a wider range of tones in a single image. So yeah, this is the 6D. We like it a lot. We're just in the process of kind of wrapping up our review of the camera right now. But it's very easy to use. It's a lot of fun. I shot with this a lot recently in the Yellowstone National Park. And I really love the live view mode with the flippy screen on the back. It makes things very, very easy if you're working on a tripod. Great for video too, because the screen's touch sensitive. So you can touch to focus, and it's very quick and very easy to use. Doesn't offer 4K video, unfortunately, but the advantages of the autofocus system and the screen arguably actually outweigh the disadvantage of only offering HD. HD is still enough for most people. So yeah, this is the 6D Mark II, and visit dpreview.com for anything else you could possibly hope to want to know on the camera. Thank you.
Thank you, Barnaby Britton. dpreview.com for Barnaby's full review. $2,000, not including a lens, so put a couple of $100 in the kitty for the lens as well. Okay. It's an expensive thing, but if you're going to get into photography, if you have maybe a high school or college student who wants to get into photography, that's a nice place to start, because the lenses you buy for that full-frame camera will then work on Canon, higher-end Canon backs down the road.
Yeah, I suppose if you're going to spend that much money, you might as well have some sort of interoperability with it, right? Not be locked
You never know with these guys.
You never know.
It's expensive to be a photographer.
Yeah, no kidding.
You want to get the high-end stuff. But as we pointed out, Vic Gundutra says you don't need it.
Just use
an iPhone.
It's a post-DSLR world.
Yeah.
We've all got the best camera in the world in our pocket. No, we don't.
You don't, because you don't have an iPhone.
You're right.
I don't know what Vic was smoking when he wrote that. I don't know. And then add insult to injury.
Honestly, when I look at the picture that sparked that, I'm sure it didn't even come from just that, but I'm sure it was one of those moments where he used the technology. He himself was personally impressed by it, and it connected with him to a certain level that he almost felt motivated to evangelize a little bit more than he maybe would have.
Very generous. See, I interpreted it as a little. a little something to Google. His former employer Vic worked at Google and created Google Plus.
Yep.
And I noticed he posted this on Facebook.
Yeah.
And said, "Don't get an Android phone." I think it was a little shot at Google. That's what I think. anyway, it's time for
the mailbag rolling in. Hey there, mailbag.
See, I hesitate to open this up. You never know.
Has it ever been like a jack that just suddenly like bounces
don't
out
give
at
them
you?
Any ideas.
Okay, sorry.
Like snakes.
Or snakes, yes. Nope.
Oh, no, but it is a picture of my hero. Oh, Mr. Chekhov. Is that Chekhov?
Oh, my God.
Sulu? Who is that?
Given it all I got, Captain?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's all I know.
No, that's not him, is it? It's Scotty? He looks so young. Is it Scotty? He doesn't look like Scotty in that picture. He looks so young. That's the original Scotty before they replaced
the original before he got older.
Before they replaced him with some old guy. Oh, it's Scotty. I'm giving it all I've got. Yeah, no, I recognize him now. I couldn't tell without the accent. All right, let's put Scotty back in the
mailbox.
See
you, Scotty.
Whose is that? Oh, Alex Gumpel.
Everybody pointed at everybody else.
I'm handing in my geek card. It's all over. I've never been a Star Wars fan. I'm sorry. All right, let's... What? What?
Nothing.
You start.
We're just going to continue on. All right, so I have an email. I've never been much of a Star Trek fan myself either, and I'm worried that my geek card will be removed from me for saying that.
I prefer Star Trek to Star Wars.
Really?
Yeah.
Star Wars is
a children's book. Star Trek, that's the real thing. With that Scotty guy.
Yeah, with that one Scott guy. Yeah.
To be fair, that was a posed Hollywood picture from the original series. He didn't look like that much longer. Right? Oh, they're not buying it.
I don't know. You're in the wrong room to get any sympathy on this, I think, Leo.
It doesn't look like Scotty. I recognize him now, but it's...
Okay. Anyways, all right. So Rick from the Great White North, Winnipeg, Manitoba, Canada.
I was more of a Spork fan myself.
A Spork?
Mr. Spork.
Oh.
Right?
Something like that.
Yeah, he was from the planet Vulcanize. I liked him.
Rick says, how do I stop my music player from auto-launching when connecting to my car's Bluetooth? I have a Samsung Galaxy S7 with 7.0. I currently use Pi Music Player and have tried Pulsar. Auto launches on both. Any ideas? Thanks. Keep up the great work.
And the only thing worse than that is when it auto-launches a music player, some other music player.
That you don't want.
That you don't... That, you know, I mean, that's... Right. So fix this, because I have the same problem.
All right. Well, here's the bad part is that I don't know that I have a 100% solution.
Right.
Strangely, it's really hard to pin this down. It could be the car's Bluetooth settings.
That's what I think.
Because there's some sort of call being set out once it connects to say play whatever it is. Yeah. So maybe your car has, or your car setup has, some sort of Bluetooth settings that you can toggle off.
Don't auto start music.
But it might not. In doing research, I found a lot of people that said their car Bluetooth settings don't have anything there. Right. They're just locked in.
Right.
You could do a nuclear option, which is turning off media audio in your device's Bluetooth settings for the paired device.
Yeah, but then you won't be able to listen to any music.
Exactly. The problem there is that it requires you to re-enable that when you want to stream audio.
Is it usually the last music player you were listening to?
That's a good question.
I think there's a default.
And actually my next solution ties right into that. There's an old app, at least on Android, called Media Button Router. And what it does, it intercepts Bluetooth controls and reroutes them. So you can activate that. And like I said, it's an old app. I haven't had the chance to play around with it, but I saw a lot of references to this, so the UI is really ancient.
Yeah.
But apparently it still works. And what it does is it gives you a whole list of all of the audio
and
apps
you can say,
on
this
your
one's
device.
The default.
And you can say, this is default. Uh-huh. Or if you don't want anything to auto-launch, I'm guessing you could uncheck all of those apps and have this enabled still, and maybe that would trick it so that nothing would start.
Right.
And you'd still have the ability to stream through. It's called Media Button Router.
Well, that's a good name. Media Button Router. All right.
Yeah.
And so that's free on Android.
That's a free app.
Problem is, I think this is a Bluetooth problem because it happens on the iPhone as well.
Right.
And the real problem is Bluetooth itself is just janky as heck.
Yeah.
So I'll get in my car. Sometimes my Audible book will start. Sometimes it won't.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes music will play. Because I was listening to music. It seems to be usually the last program I used. And autoplay sometimes works and sometimes doesn't.
Yep. And do you want autoplay to happen when you
Well,
connect?
Ideally, when I'm listening to a book, if I get out of the car and the book stops, when I get back in the car, I'd like it to continue. That would be the ideal situation.
Yeah.
About half the time that works.
Right.
It's unpredictable.
Yep.
Android or iOS. And
unpredictable,
frankly,
is my experience with Bluetooth in a nutshell. It's always
I carry both iPhone and Android phones, and then Lisa carries an iPhone. And it's really a hit or miss which phone's going to be the one that gets picked up. Right? When it, you know, you got three phones.
It's like
take your
Bluetooth Hunger Games.
Yeah, it is. It's just baffling. I don't feel like there are the rules are. I'm sure there are rules, but they're not. They're kind of weak. Like they're just do what you want.
It's really surprising to me, though, that there isn't an obvious solution for this, because not everybody wants the autoplay to happen. Bluetooth, I mean, everybody, you know, you get into your car, it's going to automatically connect if you leave your Bluetooth settings on.
I wonder
if... It's just kind of a bummer that there isn't controls for this.
If you... clearly, if you're using Android's CarPlay, or Android calls it Android Auto.
Yeah.
Or Apple's CarPlay, that should work different. Well, gosh, who knows? I don't have a car with it.
Yeah.
And then if you use one of those auto apps that went on Android that you say, anytime I pair with my phone, or with my car pairs with my phone, you should launch the auto app, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can set that up, right?
You can set that up.
Absolutely. I wonder if that would change things. That I like that feature because it kind of is a limited screen. It can be set to prevent you from texting, things like that.
And maybe that would override the auto.
That's what I'm wondering.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
I'll try it tonight. Do we have any more of the ISS above? There was a really nice video. Earlier, you were able to see... Is that a different camera? Is that the thing? They have different cameras? Pardon me?
The front camera.
They have a front and a back camera? Just like my car. Earlier, you could see from the back camera, you could see the escape Soyuz module that is attached to the ISS. That's there all the time in case something goes wrong so they can get back home. And that's the view at the front camera. That's the front window. Nice. They should have a little speedometer here, a little heads-up display. Well, look how fast they're going. They're in Australia now. They're in the Tasman Sea. Is that Australia? Is that where Tasmania is? I don't know anything. It was Mr. Scott. Okay. Question two. You know, I'm an old man. Just face it. I'm losing it. So that's why you should watch. You never know.
You never know when,
what could
when
happen.
Leo is going to lose
I could
it.
Take off my pants in 3 minutes. Anything could happen.
Don't do that.
So between a Chromebook and Android, says Jim in Fort Worth, Texas, I'm all in on using Google Sheets. Okay, he uses Google Drive. That's the spreadsheet program in Google Drive. But my boss is old school with a desktop running Excel. What, if anything, am I missing by running the Android app? I guess the Android Excel app, or does he mean Sheets?
I think the Android Excel app.
Oh, okay. Because there is Excel on the
Android. Or the web app, yeah.
And there's a web app of Excel versus what you get with Office. Thanks in advance, Jim, Fort Worth, Texas. My boss has no idea what a macro is, and I'm never telling him. Well, that's a help, because the kinds of things that are missing from the web-based Excel or Google Sheets are the higher-end features, like pivot tables. If your boss doesn't know what a macro is, he sure as hell doesn't know what a pivot table is. So in most cases, I would say, you know, a simple spreadsheet where you've got formulas, arithmetic formulas, you auto-calculation, that hasn't changed since the days of VisiCalc, right? Those things are pretty basic. Google Sheets does all of that. If that's how you're using it, I think you're not missing anything. If, on the other hand, he's writing macros, he's using pivot tables, he has elaborate kind of lookup stuff, then it might be that he can do stuff with the Office-based version of Excel that you can't do with the Android Excel. And, of course, Microsoft's not going to put every feature of the desktop Excel in its web-based version. That's a stripped-down version. Although, for most people, I think it's 99% of what you could conceivably use.
Oh, when I think of how I use Excel, or just a spreadsheet in general, I probably use 1% of the functionality of a spreadsheet. You know what I mean? And I'm sure that's how a lot of people use their spreadsheet software, hardly even scratch the surface.
So I guess, and one of the nice things about Sheets is it will read an XLS spreadsheet and it will do its best.
How does that, it can do that. Yeah. Does it do that well?
Yeah.
I mean,
it depends on how fancy it. So there's a Soyuz module right there. It depends how fancy your spreadsheet is. So again, if you have very fancy features, if you have macros, pivot tables, it's not going to understand macros.
Right.
It's not going to understand pivot tables. On the other hand, most people don't use those features. Mm-hmm. Most spreadsheets are, you know, profit and loss statements, calculations, that kind of thing. I wouldn't worry about it. So. The best thing, I guess, Jim, would be to import the spreadsheets that your boss is using, read them, see what they look like, see if they're comparable in functionality.
Yep.
And I bet they are, in which case you're not missing anything. Except prettiness. It's prettier, right? Sheets is kind of ugly. Google doesn't make its Office very attractive.
Right. Yeah, you get used to it.
You're getting the Asus Zenfone. Did you order it?
I have not ordered it yet. No, I'm going to order that. It's on pre-order right now, which is essentially the most current Project Tango AR device running Android right now.
Asus rushed it out because, of course, the iPhone, the next generation iPhone, which comes out in September or October, whatever, will have this AR kit capability, much of the same features as Project Tango.
Yeah.
But we should point out, Tango is as good as AR kit. It's just not as available. iPhone will instantly, you know, when they put it on iOS 11, there'll be 100 million devices or more that can use it instantly.
That's a huge advantage, though. Yeah. I mean, especially when you consider the developers that are already working on these apps and experiences for once AR kit hits all those phones. Apple's going to have a huge leg up as far as active development around these features.
Nevertheless,
because they have the amount of users with devices that are capable of doing anything.
I am very excited that you're getting it, and I want to see it. And of course, you'll review it on All About Android.
Absolutely.
Every Tuesday evening, 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific, 8 or 9 Eastern Time, around about midnight UTC. Tune in, watch the show. And of course, Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific for TNT.
TNT Tech with News. Megan Maroney. Yeah.
Thereabouts.
Tech news day.
Currently.
What's
morning,
going on?
Morning,
afternoon, evening, whatever.
What's going on right now? and we will be back here. We do this show next week with Ian Thompson. We do this show every Saturday afternoon, right after the radio show, about 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. That's 2200 UTC. If you want to watch live, twit.tv/live. And if you do watch live, please join us in the chat room. We love having the chat room here. They're the kids in the back of the class. They're kibitzing the whole time. Every show we do on the network, they're back there. I love them. I go in. You don't know it, kids, but I go in sometimes midnight, 3 in the morning. They're there chatting. They're playing games. It's a real community. IRC.twit.tv. We invite you to join that community. Now, if you can't be here live watching the live stream, you can always get on-demand versions of this show and everything we do. This show really is a video show, and I always forget to talk about what we're seeing so that people listening can understand it. So I apologize if I do that. You can get video, and you can also get audio at our website, twit.tv/NSS, or subscribe in whatever you use for podcasts. If you can, you know, I understand that, you know, maybe you're listening on the way in. If you get a chance to watch the video afterward, then you can see a little bit more of it. There is video, and I think it's kind of a video-focused show. This is one of the few shows we do that has mostly video downloads, I think. Right? Somewhat more than audio. Yeah. Anyway, we're glad you watch or listen whenever you can. We appreciate it. Thanks for joining us. And we will see you next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone. Woo-hoo! Yay! Well, that's a good-